They want me to get rid of my dog. Can they do that?
I'm being fined for leaving my garage door open too long.
What are covenants? Do I have any rights?
Help, I feel like I've left the American zone.
If you want the answers to those questions, join me, Sue Bartholomew, and my guests on The Commons every Saturday from 2 to 3 right here on WEBR Fairfax Radio. We'll ask the experts and we'll untangle the truth about what's left of our property rights. On the Commons is a weekly radio show dedicated to discussing the many issues surrounding mandatory membership homeowners associations. Join us as we explore this relatively new world of controlled living, which includes condominiums, cooperatives, and both attached and detached single-family homes. Living in a common ownership development means giving up the American dream. It means giving up your constitutional rights and control over your most valuable asset, your home. Living in a homeowners association means leaving the American zone. This is On the Commons, and I am Sue Bartholomew. My guest has been a champion for homeowners for many, many years. Barry Silver, thank you so much for joining us today, Barry.
Hey, it's my pleasure, and I look forward to chatting with you a little bit about the exciting world of living in a regulated community, a ghettoed community. Yeah, that's a pretty good way of putting it.
A ghettoed community. You've been doing this for a very long time. You started taking on homeowner cases, people who have been having problems with their HOAs, notably none other than George Andrus, and you won big on that one.
Yes, that one went well.
That one went very well, but there have been a lot of others over the years.
Yes, it's not just homeowners. I tend to gravitate towards people who have cases that reek with injustice that is being leveled against them, and people that need someone who can fight for them, even though they might not have a lot of money or any money to do it. Usually the Homeowners Association understands that someone would have to be pretty crazy, spend thousands of dollars fighting against them, with the possibility that if they lose, they're going to owe many thousands more. And so many people simply capitulate out of fear when the association runs roughshod over their rights. So I like to try to level the playing field by giving them an attorney who will fight back regardless of their ability to pay.
Well, you also have something that I know you did in Florida, especially with George Andrus, and you have a multiplier that if you win the case, you get the association ends up paying?
Yeah, well, that's not my idea, but under Florida law and the laws of many other states, if you take a case on a contingency basis and then you win, especially if it's involving civil rights, the court can award a multiplier. So they take your hourly rate, at least what they think it should be based on your experience and your skill, and then they multiply that times the number of hours you worked. When they come up with that number, they can potentially multiply it by 1.5 or 2 or even 2.5 perhaps, and then you end up with a much larger fee. The theory behind that is, it's really hard to find attorneys who are going to fight for people when they don't have the money to pay for it. And so if they reward the attorney with more than they would have gotten otherwise, then it'll encourage other people to do it, and it'll encourage or help people to find an attorney to represent them when they don't have money.
Well, it seems to me, if I remember correctly, that at one point, part of the way they figured that out was how likely you were to win the case. If it was sort of something that everybody said you don't have a chance of winning, and you
right.
took it and you won, I mean, that made a difference in the award, right?
That's correct. When they try to figure out what's a reasonable fee, they take various factors into account. One is the result, and the other is, what did it seem like the odds of winning were at the outset? In other words, easier to find an attorney who will represent you when you look like you have a slam-dunk case and you're going to get awarded fees from the other side. But what happens when the person has a legitimate case and a good claim and he's been wronged, but the law, for whatever reason, is against him or there's some obstacle? Those people are going to be very hard-pressed to find an attorney. So in order to help those people out, too, the courts have awarded a multiplier. If someone takes on a case in which it looked like there was not a very good chance of winning the case. You have to realize that when an attorney gets involved in these cases, it's hundreds of hours. And to ask an attorney to spend hundreds of hours on a case when he's probably going to get nothing is a little bit much to ask of the average person. If you take most people who work various jobs, if you said, hey, would you work your job for another few hundred hours? Well, you're not going to get paid anything, but we'd just like you to do it to help somebody out. Some people might say yes, but most are going to say no.
Yeah, well, I mean, you've gone to school and you've spent a lot of time getting educated and knowing the law and becoming an expert in the field, so it's not fair to ask you to do it for free.
Well, I appreciate the kind words. I'm not sure if you can call an attorney an expert in the field of law. I've heard it said that an attorney is an expert in justice, as a prostitute is an expert in love.
You not only sing, but you've got some great one-liners as well.
I try. I was told the other day when I came out of court, someone said, you know, Silver, you are really funny. I said, thanks so much. He said, yes, but don't let it go to your head, because looks aren't everything. That's why it's a good thing I'm on radio. Nobody knows.
Well, I have met you, and you don't need to be on radio. You could be anywhere. So, no, you're...
Yeah, and I always like your show because I never know what to expect. The other time I was on, I was singing.
Yeah, you were.
And they said, well, what tone of voice do you sing in? I said, what are you talking about? My name is Barry Silver. Of course I sing in a baritone.
Oh. I did not know that On the Commons became a comedy show, but that's great. We're not tied to any one thing, are we? We're good.
Well, you do law, and law comedy is actually a principle of law. There's a part of the Constitution, it's called the Comity Clause, but it's spelled C-O-M-I-T-Y. And what that means is that the laws of one state are recognized in the laws of another state if they meet certain standards. Like if you get married in Connecticut, you don't have to get remarried in California. They'll recognize the marriage as valid. That's called the Comity Clause. So I figured a little comedy might be appropriate in a law discussion.
Hey, whatever it takes, let's get the word out there. Barry, you've been busy. I know I've seen a lot of articles that have come across the internet with your name on it, and you're there championing the individual homeowners. And right now, you're, I think, up to your neck in a place called Royal Manor that sounds... Royal Manor Estates, that sounds like it's a royal pain.
Yeah, and there's all manner.
You're not the only
that's
funny
what's
one.
Going on. That's good. That's good, Joe. I'm glad that you are also reciprocating. Sometimes people take this stuff too seriously, but the situation at Royal Manor is it is really serious, and it's hard to joke around about this one because what's happening to some of the people there is just absolutely gut-wrenching and really deplorable. But what's happening is a new regime came into town at Royal Manor, and this regime is doing everything they can to toss people out and to evict them for all types of ridiculous reasons. And they seem to be targeting people who are particularly old or disabled or vulnerable because maybe they think that such people don't belong in their community. They want to try to do a little spring cleaning, and so they're trying to cleanse the community of the wrong type of people. And so
ethnic cleansing.
Yeah, it's well, there is an ethnic component to it because I'm representing one client. His name is Israel Negron, and in addition to being an attorney, I'm also a rabbi. And so I've indicated to others that if a rabbi can't defend Israel, who will?
Hey, Barry, if this rabbinical business and the law doesn't work out, you could always be a stand-up comedian.
There you go.
Well, on TV, there you go.
I'm also a rabbi, and I throw a lot of comedy into my wedding ceremonies. In fact, I did a ceremony last weekend, and I never saw two happier people than the caterer and the caterer's wife. And when the ceremony was over, the groom had to break a glass, and he said, why do I do that? I said, well, it's very simple. It's the last chance you'll ever get to put your foot down. So anyway, I was drawn to Israel Negron, and Israel Negron is a particularly deplorable situation because we had the property manager, Carl Pierce, who's been the enforcer of all of these draconian laws, and Carl Pierce was there testifying, and I asked him, what is it that first drew your attention to Israel Negron? and he said somebody was complaining about the ethnic music that he was playing, and they said it was playing too loud, at which point I thought the judge might just toss the case out then and there, because it's just blatantly discriminatory to target somebody because of the type of music they're listening to, because it's ethnic music. So when you said ethnic cleansing, it's really quite astonishing that he would even say such a thing. But he did, and the judge didn't really care. And so they targeted him. And the other thing that happened that I thought was quite astonishing is that when he was testifying, he admitted that Mr. Negron wanted to work things out. They cited him, like the others, for some kind of picayune violations. And they asked why he didn't try to work things out. And what he said was, this is the property manager, well, I was talking to Mr. Negron and trying to work things out, but he was stubborn and he wasn't agreeing to what I was saying. I said, well, did you give up or did you continue trying to work things out? At which he said, I'm not going to stand around arguing with an old man. and that he just broke off the conversation.
You're kidding.
No, so he's already admitting within his testimony that he's targeting people who are of a certain ethnic group, and he doesn't have any tolerance for people who are aged. You would think that he'd have respect for them, but instead he looks down at them. Now, this community, it's true, is a senior community, but the people who are more than just seniors, but if they're senior and very old, or senior and belong to some ethnic group, or senior and disabled, then you got a problem. Then they're going to probably target you. And that's what we've noticed going on at Royal Manor.
Well, there's something in one of the articles about people from Canada. So you're quoted as saying if you're Canadian, you have nothing to worry about.
Seems that way. We've yet to find anybody who's Canadian who's been the subject of any type of harassment or claimed rule violations or any problems whatsoever. And I'm told that the owners are friendly, or the people who are in charge now are friendly with the French Canadians who are moving in, and that perhaps they're a bit more affluent than the people who live there now. And so they're getting apparently royal treatment from Royal Manor, while my clients are treated all manner of vicissitude.
You've got more than one client in there, right?
Yes, that's true. I also have another client, Cal Dever, who is a 88-year-old veteran of World War II, and he made the mistake of having his plants resting upon some kind of a structure that reminds them of shelving, and they said shelves belong inside, not outside, so we're throwing you out. And
wait a minute.
There are a couple of other minor things, too, like a screen that's been fixed long ago, and it was pretty outrageous, and the community was really upset that they would target this veteran. He's 88, and he's in very, very frail health. He doesn't have funds to go anywhere, so if he were to be evicted, which is what they're trying their best to do, he'd end up on the street somewhere, most likely. We've been trying to get family for him, but that seems to be a problem. But they don't really care. They just want him out, and there's not an issue about paying rent or paying his bills. He's paid his bills. He's a responsible person, and they still want him out, and there's just a complete lack of compassion on their part.
His plants rested on a shelf, and that's why they're trying to evict him?
Yeah, he had some kind of a structure that reminded them of shelving. It was like these various shelves or ledges that he had it on. And so, for whatever reason, they have a problem with this. Israel Negron, his situation was laughable. The one who was targeted because of his ethnic music. When his case came up, they targeted him because he was growing vegetables. And they said, you can grow fruit, but you're not allowed to grow vegetables. And I couldn't quite understand what the rationale would be for saying fruit is okay, but not vegetables. And I know that even experts have trouble distinguishing a fruit from a vegetable. So it seemed to me like they would have trouble enforcing the rule because it would be hard to distinguish certain fruit from certain vegetables. So I asked Mr. Pierce, could you please explain the difference between a fruit and a vegetable? And he said, yeah, it's very simple. A fruit is a fruit. And a vegetable is a vegetable. So after I thanked him for clarifying the situation, I suggested to the court that the rule is vague. It's a basic principle of law, just for your listeners who are trying to figure out if I've been targeted by these condo commanders, and if I don't live in Florida, or if I don't want Silver to represent me because I don't want to hear or be subjected to his horrible jokes, it'll be enough to be harassed by the association. I don't want to be harassed by his jokes. And they decide they want to do this on their own. There's certain defenses that you can come up with. One of them is that the rules are vague. See, sometimes somebody says, you're violating the rule, and the people think, okay, I violated the rule, I have no defense. But sometimes you do. Not always, but if the rule is vague and hard to understand, you can have the rule thrown out or challenged as unenforceable, because there's a legal doctrine that if somebody's writing rules, they need to write them properly so that people can understand. And if somebody can't understand what the rules mean because they're vague or ambiguous, then it wouldn't be fair to enforce them against somebody. So that's a legal challenge, saying the rules are vague. So I suggested the rules are vague, and I never dreamed that Mr. Pierce would confirm that in spades when he came up with his nonsensical answer about how to distinguish fruit from vegetables. But it seems that in certain courtrooms, the writing's already on the wall. They're just gonna toss people out, and it didn't seem to matter what type of inane things came out of the other side. The decision was the same. So the one who was very successful was Cal Dever, the World War II vet. He actually had a default entered against him, and entered the scene and was able to have that overturned. And so now he's able to stay in his place for now. And we're awaiting a final hearing on that one to see what the ultimate decision will be. But we're happy that he has a reprieve and he's able to stay there for the time being.
Let's go back to Israel Negron.
Okay.
You filed for an emergency stay of eviction, but the court denied it without a hearing? Wouldn't even listen to you?
Yeah, I was just trying to find a judge to entertain the motion, and there was no one who would hear it, and it was just, my motion was denied without any type of hearing.
So what happened? I know that he ended up in the hospital because the stress was really bad, and he ended up with a heart attack.
That's exactly right. I mean, this is deadly serious what we're talking about, and he did. He was sent to the hospital, and it still didn't have any impact upon the association. They still want him out, and they don't really care. He's nowhere to go. So I believe he's now with family members, but we filed counterclaims on his case and others, trying to seek damages from the association for what they're putting these people through.
There is a psychologist, Dr. Gary Gary Solomon in Nevada, and he's come up with a paper called the HOA syndrome, and he says that HOAs are harmful to your health.
Yeah, I've heard about that. I think I've read some excerpts from it.
And in fact, I had him on last week, and we talked about the Negron case, because what scared the living daylights out of me was that when the news went out in this wonderful Royal Manor estate that he had been evicted, some of his neighbors were actually cheering.
Yeah, that's true. There's a faction there that is, you know, aligned with the management, and they're pretty callous. And to take an old guy who has nowhere to go and to cheer for his...
Because he's in the hospital and he's being evicted because he grew fruit, I mean vegetables instead of fruit.
Yeah, I know, it's absolutely ridiculous.
Barry, what's happening out here? I mean,
I don't know.
It's insane.
Yeah, it really is. You can't find any type of compassion from certain people. And what also strikes me as very sad about our legal system is that, believe it or not, when there's a jury trial, the attorneys meet with the judge and they put together what we call jury instructions. These are instructions that are read to the jury. And the judge works with the attorneys to come up with some type of jury instructions that are acceptable to both sides. And invariably, standard boilerplate language in these instructions is that the jury should not exercise any type of compassion or any type of sympathy for either party. And I find that outrageous. And I always object, and I always know my objection will be overruled, and sometimes a smile comes across the face of the judge and opposing counsel. But I can't understand how anybody could operate within a legal system that refuses to recognize compassion or sympathy for someone. What type of system is that? And the other thing is that they don't allow for justice to be considered in this situation, which is also deplorable. Now, in the Supreme Court, they call somebody a chief justice, but I guess on the lower levels, they're not really interested in justice, and it's not even allowed in. You have to rule mechanically according to what they think the law says. And a lot of times they don't even do that. They just rule with what they think the ruling party or the more powerful one thinks is right, and they get the benefit of the doubt. So the whole system needs to be revised. And there's a couple of areas of law that are particularly hard hit by a system that doesn't have justice, fairness, and compassion. And one of those is the homeowner situation. The other one that's really, really sad is matrimonial law, what they call family law. It should be called anti-family law, because the legal system is really very anti-family. I mean, if you think about it, to have two people who were in a relationship that was a loving relationship and they cared for each other, and then that love, for whatever reason, is no more, and sometimes there's bitterness and anger, to put those two people in a courtroom and to hire two gladiators to go at it and make their lives miserable, and to have the kids caught in the crossfire and have the family's resources depleted because of this. This is a sad, sad spectacle. And the attorneys actually have a conflict of interest with their clients, because the attorneys very often are paid by the hour. So the more they can drag out this bloodbath and the more animosity they can cause, the more money the attorney makes. And the system is not really designed for this type of combat, but, I mean, it shouldn't be, but the system allows for this and preys upon people. And the homeowner situation is similar. There should be a very simple way of just working out these disputes, but it doesn't happen that way. The disputes are made into terrible, terrible combat and conflict, and whoever loses could end up owing a ton of money.
We're talking to Barry Silver. Barry is an attorney in Florida who has a heart as big as outdoors. He's got a great sense of humor, some funny one-liners, and he's a singer. And he's been taking on all of these cases that are just absolutely heartbreaking. Barry, I'm sitting here listening to you. Now, Israel Negron owns his trailer. We're talking about a trailer park. We're not, forget
right.
The Royal Manor Estates. It sounds like some grandiose place, but it's a trailer park when you get right down to it.
It's pretty much the last resort for people who could otherwise become homeless if they don't have a place like this to stay. I don't mean to say anything disparaging about the community, because I want you to know, and the people listening to know, that this was a really beautiful, wonderful community 20 years ago. There was an elderly couple who owned it, ran it, and they had so much compassion in their heart. And if somebody did something that was a violation, they would talk to them and get them to comply. And if for some reason they couldn't comply for financial reasons, the neighbors would actually help out and help this person to stay there. What a beautiful community it was.
So it's a community. You're using the word community here.
Yeah, it's definitely a community, or at least it was.
Okay,
and then what happened is
it became a ghetto.
Yeah, well, what happened is, I mean, the outside appearance is the same, but when this elderly couple passed away, apparently their kids inherited it. And to them, it was just a cash cow. It wasn't a community at all. It was just an asset or a commodity. And so they ran it as a commodity, which was completely devoid of any human feeling for anybody. It was just how to make money. And apparently they make money when they sell the place from one to another. As they force people out, they can pick up the place cheap when the people are forced out, and maybe they can sell it to somebody else and make a profit and bring in people who are more affluent. It's really a sad situation, and I think it's indicative of a basic problem in this country that money seems to be a focus of such importance that it drives people to do things that are very reprehensible. I mean, we have a United States Supreme Court that just made a ruling which says that in our legal system and in our political system, money talks. I mean, how sad that they equate free speech with money in this ruling they made on campaign finance reform. I mean, I've heard that money talks, but now that is literally true in the political system, according to our Supreme Court. And what that means is that I suppose if you have more money, then you have more right to speak than other people do with less money, and your speech is able to drown out others. I know that's somewhat of a detour of our topic, but we need to put all this into context in a legal system in which if you have money, you're able to twist things and to prevail, and if you don't, you're in trouble. Because my clients, the ones that live at Royal Manor, if they don't find someone like me, they're just out of luck. They're going to go in unrepresented because attorneys are not going to be able to, they can't afford attorneys to go to bat for them. And so the injustice that takes place is really deplorable.
Okay, help me understand this, Barry. Israel Negron owns his trailer and he bought the lot. How are they evicting him out of his own home? What's the legal mechanism they're using here?
Well, what they do is they don't contest that he owns that home, but what they say is that there are certain rules that govern the association where they live, and if you violate the rules, then they have the right to evict the person. And so they're seeking an eviction of a person out of their own home for violating rules, and the law tells them that they can do it. And the law, in theory, has certain protections that are in place, but in reality, those protections usually are ignored by the court. So, for instance, there's a Florida statute dealing with mobile homes, and it says that the state of Florida recognizes that there's unequal bargaining position, and therefore that the homeowner should be... The court should take that into account when dealing with a homeowner. There's unequal bargaining position because the homeowner is bargaining for a place to live and the association is just bargaining for financial terms. But when it comes down to it, those types of things are ignored. And I actually had a judge tell me that she's not allowed to use any type of compassion or sympathy for anybody in these cases. And I said, that's not true. You're wrong. Because these types of cases, an eviction action is considered a case in equity. And in the old legal system, there were two types of tribunals. One was called a court of law, and the other was a court of equity. And equity means fairness, of course. And an eviction action, historically, would be brought in a court of equity. And so even today, the vestige is that these cases are supposed to be decided on equity or fairness. And if you want to go by fairness, there's no way these people should be evicted. But the court, the judge, was saying, well, I can't use sympathy or compassion. And that's just wrong. I mean, they're just so used to ignoring compassion that they think they never can. But it's not true. An equitable action is typically an action where you're trying to get someone to do something or not do something. Whereas an action at law is an action where you're trying to get them to pay money to compensate somebody. So when you want an injunction and you want somebody evicted, that's something that's not money necessarily. That's just something that you want an action to be done. That's an equitable action. Now, it could also involve the payment of money for the person that lost, but the main action is considered equity.
There's also another law, fair housing.
Right.
And it would seem to me that a lot of what's going on here would be violating fair housing laws.
Yes, we've raised counterclaims dealing with violations of the Fair Housing Act. So these counterclaims have been filed, and they're working their way through the system right now.
because I, you know, this, it just boggles the mind, and the sheer stupidity and the sheer pettiness of the way that these associations are dealing with issues. I looked through a bunch of these lost, or these articles, and in Royal Manor Estates, there's nothing really serious that's going on.
Yeah.
There is nothing serious going on. I mean, it's all petty and stupid.
And it's astounding that every single one of them has paid all of their dues and maintenance. There's no question about anybody not paying money. It's just, trivial things, like you say, that they're picking on in order to evict somebody.
A tear in a screen?
Yeah.
I mean, we've come to a point where I think we really need to look at what we've done here, and I think we really need to decide that we just can't keep going on like this. It's not worth it. Why would I want to live? Why would I want to live in something like that?
Well, I agree with you, and I look at it from two different perspectives because I'm a lawyer and I'm a rabbi, so I wear two yarmulkes at the same time.
And, you're a two-headed guy, huh?
Yeah, it's not always easy doing that also because, like, if somebody says something or does something to me that's really malicious, I don't know whether I should sue them or forgive them. And then I had
you're in a conundrum.
It definitely is. I had somebody come into my office who was a Haitian, because I represent a lot of people from different countries, and he said, "Mr. Silva, can you be my liar?" And I said, "Don't you mean lawyer?" And he said, "It's the same thing, isn't it?" So it's an interesting situation. But speaking as a rabbi, if I may, for a moment, we have a holiday coming up, and it's called Passover. And Passover actually was what was celebrated by Jesus, according to Christian scripture, at the Last Supper. And so I perform a lot of interfaith seders with the Christian community. And Passover celebrates freedom. And I can't think of a better theme that is urgently needed in our legal system than this theme of freedom. And people really need to be liberated from the tyrannical approach of some of these associations. Now, I'm not going to compare them to Pharaoh, because Pharaoh was pretty brutal. He enslaved people. And people in the associations are not physically enslaved like they were in the days of Pharaoh, but in some ways...
What's the difference? Where's the difference, Barry?
In some ways, they are having their freedoms taken away, and they are enslaved in some ways to a tyrannical type of regime. And so I think Passover is a very good time to have me on and also to speak about this issue and to suggest that people deserve to be liberated and live in freedom. Even if they're in a homeless association, they should still be free to do what they want as long as they're not hurting somebody or violating some kind of serious rule.
Why is it that these associations always tend to go after people who are vulnerable? Negron is 72 years old. Dever is 88 years old. I mean, these are people who are going to be affected more so than most people.
Absolutely. It's kind of like, why does a school bully go after somebody who is perceived as a little bit different or maybe not able to defend themselves so well? We know the syndrome, and we see it here, too, unless these people have no money to fight back. But, it's usually the vulnerable that they go after. The other group that is clearly targeted, which I see over and over and over again, is if anyone dares to challenge or to question what is done in the community, those people are targeted relentlessly. All of a sudden, there's all types of violations that have popped up on these people's property, and then at the board meetings, they're slandered because the association runs the meeting, so they control the channels of communication. So they can get up and say all types of terrible things about this person, and then they don't have any right to respond, and then the association writes their own newsletters, and they just completely manipulate things to make this person into a pariah and an outcast. I've seen that happen a lot, and it's really sad.
And you know what's really sad, Barry, is that the Community Associations Institute, this is the institute that feeds off of homeowners, the industry, They, whenever a story comes out about embezzlement or any great, huge thing that they cannot sort of shove under the rug, they turn around and blame the homeowner because the homeowner didn't provide the oversight. It's your home. It's your property. What are you doing? Why aren't you providing the oversight? Yet they're teaching these managers to go after troublemakers. They're known as troublemakers, gadflies, troublemakers. There can't possibly be anything wrong because, you see, they're just looking for trouble.
Yeah, well, I know what it's like. Cause I came out there to Royal Manor to have a community meeting to talk about what's going on. And the next thing I know, the leaders of the management team and the association, they're out there trashing me, saying horrible things about me. It's like whoever comes out there to try to help out is public enemy number one in this place.
Yeah, oh yeah. I mean, that happens across the board. If I've gone, you know, sometimes I'll go to meetings, other people's meetings, and, you know, it's like, oh, my God, who's that?
They probably make you out to be some kind of a horrible terrorist or troublemaker or communist or
absolutely,
something like that.
Absolutely, absolutely. I smile sweetly and I go, well, hey, I can bully people without even trying here. Hey, that's a real talent.
Yeah, that sure is.
That's talent.
I'm sure they get a little nervous when they see you coming.
Well, they don't always recognize me, but sometimes they, that's the beauty of being on radio.
Yeah, I guess that is. Yeah, that's a good advantage to it, yeah.
Absolutely. Going back to this HOA syndrome, because this really bothers me about Israel Negron, the fact that he was so sick and that he had to go to the hospital.
Yeah.
What are the odds? And you're a former legislator as well. So
right,
you're.
But I thought you weren't going to insult me as a guest on the program.
I'm not insulting you. I love you, Barry.
Okay. Well, you called me a legislator.
You were. I said a former legislator. So you.
Okay.
So you know the ins and outs. What is it going to take to get the world to recognize that stress? I mean, look at what we did with the tobacco industry.
Yeah.
Smoking kills you. Smoking kills you. Living in an HOA kills you.
Yeah, that's true. And if you're waiting for the legislature to do the right thing, it could be a very, very long wait.
Well, that's why I'm asking you how to go about doing that. But how to get this recognized, because it's not something that's out of the clear blue. We all know that stress causes physical problems. We've been talking about it for years.
Right.
And when you live in one of these things and you've got these thugs running these places and they can evict you out of your own home and you're paid up. And it's enough to cause you physical harm. Is there any way that we can get that recognized in the law? I would love to see you get multipliers representing these people who are getting sick because of this stupidity.
Yeah, the way the legal system works is it usually caters to people who are financially well-heeled, unless there's a big grassroots movement of people that demand something be done and let the legislature know that if they don't do that, they're going to be voted out of office. So the way to counter all this is to do exactly what you're doing, to have a program like this so that the word can be spread, people can learn about what's happening, find out that it's not just happening to them, that it's happening to others, and then coordinate efforts and band together in order to try to counter the effect of the other side that has lots of money and influence with the legislature. So if people are interested in trying to deal with the situation, they should continue to listen to your program.
I love you, Barry. You're such a sweetie.
And just collect the information and learn from what you're saying so that they have a means to fight back. Because these associations, this is the government, right? And the associations control the life of people much more than the federal government does in various areas. So if you want to learn about what to do about runaway government, then listen to this program, talk to your neighbors, gather together, and show up at homeowners meetings. And when the board is getting together, go out there and ask what's going on, and be a watchdog. Because most people who live in these communities, they don't want to be a watchdog, they want to be a lapdog. And they just go along with what people are doing, even if it's unjust. But then eventually, sometimes it comes back to haunt them. But even if they're not personally affected by some kind of rules, the atmosphere that's created within a community when cruelty abounds and when the association is targeting people, it just changes the whole nature of the community. It might look on the outside exactly the same, but for people who live there on the inside, the feel and the look of this community is very, very different, and it affects everybody.
Well, I think, you know, what you were saying a while ago about a group of people that's always targeted is the group of people who asks questions.
Right.
I think there's a fear factor, and yep. I think that, you know, you might be living next door between two people that you're really good friends with, and so you go up to them and say, you know, the HOA is targeting me because there was a little rip in my screen. In the back, and nobody could see it, but, you know, somebody came over the fence, and they had cameras, and they, you know, all of that other wonderful stuff. And so now they're trying to evict me out of my own home. I don't owe anything. You know, your friends and your neighbors are going to say, we really feel sorry for you, but we cannot support you publicly, because then they'll come out after us.
Yeah, that is really sad when that type of thing happens, and people need to have courage and speak up and stand up for what's right.
And so there's that goes on as well.
Yeah, and again, that really should be a moral and a religious imperative. There's a lot of people that consider themselves religious, but then they go and capitulate and don't speak up for someone, and that is really against my understanding of what being a moral, religious person is all about. But you can't, and the Bible clearly says, you shall not stand idly by in the face of injustice, and don't follow a multitude to do evil. And these are things that are part and parcel of Judaism and Christianity, but so often they're ignored. People need to be courageous and speak up and stand with their neighbors when they're being harassed in order to make sure this doesn't permeate the entire neighborhood.
Now, you've got this situation going on in the Royal Manor Estates where you've got a number of people that are targeted.
Yeah,
and it's not just a couple of people. I mean, they're really going after quite a few people, aren't they?
Yeah, there's maybe about 7 or 8 people who are on their hit list.
And are you representing all of them?
Well, you know, a lot of them call me up and talk to me. Some of them are not at the stage where there's been litigation, but the ones that are litigated, they've all called me up, and I've helped out whoever called.
Let's go back to Israel Negron. He's not in his house anymore. He's been evicted. He's moved.
Right, and his neighbors came around to try to help, and to help move his stuff and help find a place, and I believe they found a temporary place with a relative. But I'm not sure about that. I know he's somewhere. He's not on the street right now, but he's desperate, and that could happen any day, so we're looking around for a place that he can go.
What about, okay, so you've also filed fair housing complaints.
And yeah, complaint based on that, yeah.
And that takes a while because they have to go through and investigate and talk to a bunch of people, right?
That's correct, yeah.
And if they find that he has been, you know, discriminated against, what happens then, Barry?
Well, then he would be able to seek damages, attorney's fees, costs, and so the court would come up with some fairly large number, I suppose, to compensate him for all he's been through, which the law would then assume was wrongful because he should have been allowed to stay in the first place. So it would be hard to assess damages, but if you figure how would somebody be damaged if they were tossed out of their house wrongfully for a while? That would be pretty bad. But it would be up to a court of law to figure out how to translate that into dollars and cents.
Now listen, the court didn't have any problem translating dumping a cup of hot coffee on yourself into dollars and cents. It would seem to me having a heart attack ought to be compensated for something.
Yeah, well, that's true. And obviously something, but the question is, what is that something? How much is that worth? You may have to take into account all types of factors. What was his health like before? How old is he? What was his quality of life? Are we sure that it's because of this incident, or could it have been something else? So there's a lot of murky variables that go into the equation. It's far from an exact science.
So that would be an entirely separate case.
No, the damages are part of the same case. You see, you're going off into a different area of law, but I also do personal injury, so let me just clarify that.
I know, that's why I'm talking about it, because I really think that if we started, you know, the tobacco industry has been hit big time with people smoking voluntarily, paying for it, smoking, getting cancer, and then saying, oops, you caused it, and the courts are going, yeah, you're right, you know, here are a few million dollars that we'll throw at you to compensate for your stupidity.
Yeah,
and I'm a former smoker, so, you know, I can say that. But here you've got someone who bought a house, who owns the house, does not own any money. He has a garden that he planted vegetables in, and then he's evicted. The stress causes him to have a heart attack. He ends up in the hospital. And the whole thing started because this thug that's handling the whole thing decides that he was playing ethnic music.
Yeah. That's what happens. Well, remember when I was mentioning that there's two types of cases, one that they consider to be in a court of equity and the other in a court of law. The equity, you're trying to get injunctive relief to get someone to do something or not. And the court of law, we're getting damages. So in those cases, there's two aspects of that. One, you have to show liability, and then two, you have to show damages. So the liability means, did they do something wrong? Was it their fault in some kind of legally cognizable way that fits into a cause of action? If so, then you go to the next phase where you present evidence of damages, and that clearly is not an exact science at all, but you present evidence, and then the judge or jury determines the damages. That's how that would be done.
But I'm just wondering, see, I'd like to see us start to move in that direction, because so far the balance has been tipped so much in favor of the associations and the bullies, because the law's been protecting them. It's a contract. You agreed to it. Nobody agreed to be bullied. Nobody agreed to be harassed and abused like that. But yet the law sees it as a contract, and you, homeowner, are the bad guy because you're violating the contract.
Yeah, that's what they say very often. That's exactly how the argument runs.
And
but people clearly don't realize that they're signing up for that type of behavior.
Well, the thing is, you said, is it in there? Is it vague? Quite often, there's nothing in there. I mean, these associations just act ultra vires. They just assume that they have the authority to do things, and they just take off and do it. So, I mean, they don't have that authority. There's nothing in there. You didn't agree to anything. These thugs are acting outside the scope of their authority.
Yeah. Well, like I say, there's different ways of challenging that. One is to look at the rules and see if there's some ambiguity in the rule. The other is to look at how they're enforcing it. Are they selectively enforcing and targeting certain people and not others? If that's the case, you could win the case on that basis alone. The other thing is, are they enacting rules that are blatant violations of the Constitution? And, you know, like if they say, you know, you can grow certain types of flowers but not others, theoretically that would be upheld as valid. It's stupid and it's crazy, but it's not a violation of a constitutional right, so the association can pass inane rules and people have to live by them. But if they say you have to be a certain religion, and if you practice this religion, you can't live there, that would be inane and stupid also, but it's also a violation of a fundamental right of religion. So those types of rules are not allowed. And sometimes you get into things that are kind of like a borderline, like somebody who has, I've dealt with people who come from Jamaica, and they have fruit trees, and this is part of their culture, and they don't like to have to buy fruit and vegetables in a store. They feel good about growing it on their own, and some of them are, might be Rastafarians, and there might be some religious component, and those types of issues can be successfully litigated if you tie it into a fundamental right like freedom of religion or freedom of speech. That's another avenue that people can use to argue a case. I actually have somebody in a community who's being cited because she has chickens running around. And they passed a rule, you can't have chickens. Now, this person is a Seventh-day Adventist, and she's really concerned about the mistreatment of animals when they breed them to lay eggs. And I'm concerned about that also. And she said, I don't believe in eating eggs that were mass-produced. I believe that I should grow them myself under the conditions that I consider to be humane. And so I've tied that into a religious issue on her part. Now, maybe she doesn't go to a church or a synagogue like other people do, but her belief system is religious just as much as anybody who's in a building. And we shouldn't have an edifice complex where you have to be in a building, otherwise it's not considered to be a valid religious belief.
Oh, I like that one. What happened with that case? Did you win it?
Actually, so far, yes. So far, they've been rebuffed at every opportunity, and she still has her chickens, and they're still laying eggs, and the city's tried about three times to get rid of her and her chickens, and so far they've ended up with just one giant goose egg, or actually one giant chicken egg.
Oh, and so this is against the city and not against an HOA?
Yeah, that's not an HOA. But I was just indicating that sometimes you can tie in a religious belief to grant the person greater freedom and to challenge the rules. So that does happen, though, in the homeowner's context where somebody is doing something and it might be based on a religious feeling, or sometimes it's, they have this religious symbols, like you have a mezuzah or a wreath or something like that, and they say you can't have it. If it's connected up with a form of religious expression, then it's given, you have more rights to do it than otherwise.
So I really like that. So for everybody out there, if you can tie it into something religious, go for it. But Barry, why do we have to keep jumping through all these hoops just to have basic human rights? I mean, that's all it is basic human rights, right?
Absolutely. Well, the theory goes that once you move in there, you give up your basic human rights, and now you become a subject of the association. And to some extent, that's true, but in many respects, you can't do it. And another thing that people can do, of course, is just like with our government, if we don't like the government, we can try to vote other people in and vote them out of office. And that's another very potent weapon. It requires mobilizing the community, educating them, and finding people who actually care about what's going on. And if you can do that, then you can vote these people out of office. I just want to also mention, because I don't want to create a false impression, like every person who's running a community or who's sitting on a board is some kind of mean, Machiavellian tyrant. They're not.
There are
many people who do this for the right reason. You see, the boards attract certain types of people. Some people are very dedicated, very good, very compassionate, very intelligent people who actually want to volunteer because they want to be helpful to the community and help run it in a humane, intelligent way. And other people are attracted to it because they want power, or they want to exert vengeance on somebody, or they want people to do their bidding. And you get those types of people too. And those people have no business serving on a board.
I'm not targeting individuals, and I'm not targeting all boards. What I'm targeting is this concept that just doesn't seem to be working, because it creates situations where the wrong type of people can get in there.
Right.
And that's what I'm targeting. That's what I'm looking at. Is this a valid form of housing? I can't find anything to suggest that it is.
Yeah.
Just my feelings.
Well, I can certainly understand why you would think that, because of all the horror stories that we see. And there are many good people who are on the boards, but human nature being what it is, it tends to attract people who get on these boards for the wrong reasons. We see that all the time.
Would you believe we're out of time?
Time really flies when you're having fun, but it's always a pleasure speaking with you, and thank you for having me on, and really appreciate what you're doing to help out homeowners, because having a show like yours to educate them and to help mobilize people and help tell them what they can do is a great thing. So thanks for doing what you are doing, and thanks for having me on. letting me participate.
Good luck, and please keep in touch and let us know how Mr. Negron's doing. And come back again real soon.
Okay, sounds great. Take care.
Thanks, Barry. Bye.
Please check out our website at onthecommons.us. On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Now there's lots of open meetings close to justice for HO. Those arrogant board members say what they want you to know. The CAI and ULI will help you lose it all. But I wouldn't sell that dream home, yet the writing's on the wall. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Well, we're not afraid or stupid, all your threats mean nothing here. Time marches on, soon you'll be gone, united we'll be there. So put your rules and CCRs up where the sun don't shine, and enjoy those precious golden years, stop messing around with mine. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.